KJAN, Radio Atlantic.
And at 8 o'clock, it's sunny, 74 degrees. We look forward to be partly cloudy, hot, and humid today, high around 90. Good morning, I'm Rick Hansen with KJAN News, brought to you by Jacobson Plumbing and Heating in Fontenelle, your Train home comfort specialist dealer. The Atlantic Parks and Recreation Department's Board of Directors Monday evening tabled further discussion and action on a proposal to make Sunnyside Park tobacco-free. The decision followed comments by several individuals in favor of the idea and nearly an equal number of persons opposed to it. The board will instead gather more one-on-one input and take a close look at Iowa's law on the Smoke-Free Air Act, as suggested by Councilman Chris Jimerson, the council's liaison to the board. They'll take up the matter again during their next meeting on August 19th. Among those who spoke in favor of the proposal was Carla Akers, Tobacco Prevention Coordinator for Cass County Public Health. She presented a petition with 109 signatures of mostly local residents who supported the proposal. Also speaking during the meeting was Atlantic resident Denise Coder, Atlantic resident Carol Schuler, and Kiwanis president Laura Bacon. Schuler said during a recent weekend camping excursion with friends at the park, the atmosphere was nice, but she and some kids spent a good deal of their time picking up litter.
I would say that we picked up literally 50 to 60 cigarette butts. And it was such a surprise to me at the time because we were just walking around and picking it up, and I wasn't thinking anything about it. We picked up some Coke things and that type of thing, too. So I guess, too, from the standpoint of keeping our parks clean and the awareness of that role model that people have, I think it's important for our kids in our community to also see that role model of smoking's not good for you.
And Laura Bacon said the Kiwanis Club is also in favor of the proposal because of health concerns and keeping the park clean. Speaking out against the proposal was Dennis Byrne of Atlantic, who said he does not smoke, but feels making the park tobacco-free would be infringing on the rights of those who do.
I can understand going underneath the shelters. I can understand in certain areas where there's people congregate, but for the whole park, no.
David Anderson of Atlantic is a smoker who uses the park frequently, as well as his son, who along with his friends plays frisbee golf there. He agreed there should be designated smoking areas, but they should not make the whole park tobacco-free. Atlantic resident and Cass County Board Chair Mark Wiedemeyer told the Parks Board they would be overstepping their duties if they went to the extreme of making the park tobacco-free.
As long as it's a legal substance, and you could have some of those houses be smoke-free by the choice of the people that are using it. That would be simple, I would think. And like you said, where the kids are going to be, make that non-smoking. But how are you going to enforce this? You going to send cops out running around the parks and picking people up for smoking? That just doesn't seem to make much sense to me, especially when it's a legal substance. If you want to work against cigarettes, you see cigarettes, and that annoys me, cigarettes flicked out all over. Get the police out there to find them for litter. That will control it. You don't need to make it no smoking. I just don't get it. I think you're going beyond here.
Frank Saddlemeyer of Atlantic had no problem with establishing boundaries for smoking. He questioned, however, how whole park policy could effectively be regulated when other offenses such as speeding and littering go unpunished.
I mean, how can you regulate somebody setting up in the corner of the park, out of view? You tell them not to smoke. I mean, there's so many regulations on the book right now, and we're going to add another one to it. I mean, we can't police the littering up there right now. We can't police the horseplay with the vehicles off the gravel off the roads. We can't police the traffic. I mean, the speeding and the horseplay goes on with the vehicles, and that's just as dangerous as smoking is.
Nancy Gibson of Atlantic said she understands the rights of smokers because she grew up with them in their home, but she says it's important to impress upon young people the dangers of smoking and to protect them from it, even in an outdoor environment. Carla Akers said the idea for a tobacco-free park came from middle school-aged youth. She said they felt it should be tobacco-free because of the amount of litter, secondhand smoke, and the risk to the environment. Councilman Chris Jimerson said there are already public areas in the park where smoking is prohibited by law, such as in the bleachers of the Ball Diamonds, a concert of the Band Shell, and other such sites where mass numbers of people can congregate. News time is 8:04.
Last week, Mark became the proud father of twins.
Look, pumpkin silk diapers.
Like any new father, he wants the best for his girls. So he also became the proud owner of a Trane central cooling system. It keeps Mark's whole house cool and comfortable no matter how hot it gets outside.
Doesn't that feel good?
And since Trane systems can also lower energy costs, there's more for the college fund.
Ivy League, of course.
When they say expect more from a train, they back it with over 90 years of industry-leading innovation, engineering, and manufacturing excellence. Hi, this is Bob Jacobson, owner of Jacobson Plumbing, Heating, and Fontenelle, your area train dealer. You know the true train difference? You, your family, your comfort, and what it means most to us is providing better, healthier air for those that mean the most to you. Shouldn't that be reason enough to call me now at 877-838-8580? Call me now and let me show you how you can save money with a new train home comfort system. 877-838-8580, Jacobson Plumbing and Heating in Fontenelle, where it's hard to stop a train.
A Republican candidate for Iowa's U.S. Senate seat is launching her campaign with a six-city tour. State Senator Joni Ernst announced last week that she would seek the GOP nomination for the Senate seat held for decades by Democrat Tom Harkin, who decided not to seek re-election. The 43-year-old Ernst will start her initial campaign trip Wednesday morning at the Montgomery County Courthouse in her hometown of Red Oak. She'll continue with stops Wednesday and Thursday in Waukee, Council Bluffs, Cedar Rapids, Sioux City, and Davenport. Other Republicans seeking the nomination include former U.S. Attorney Matt Whitaker, Sioux City talk show host Sam Clovis, Attorney Paul Lund, and David Young, a former aide to Senator Chuck Grassley. On the Democratic side, U.S. Representative Bruce Braley is his party's only candidate. A Central Iowa man who has announced his candidacy for U.S. Congress will be in Atlantic this evening. Gabe De Lacerda of Des Moines will speak and meet with the public at the Cass County Courthouse Basement Conference Room beginning at 7 p.m. De Lacerda will be available for questions and explain why he wants to run against Tom Latham, the current congressman for Iowa's 3rd District. A University of Northern Iowa political science professor has analyzed voter registration data and ranked the most Republican and most Democratic counties in Iowa. Christopher Larimer says his research shows why Mitt Romney's campaign was so focused on eastern Iowa rather than western Iowa.
There was a lot mentioned this last presidential cycle about why on earth would Mitt Romney visit the eastern part of the state, go to Dubuque or Clinton County, I think he made visits, or why is Paul Ryan in Blackhawk County? Well, the answer, obviously, is vote share. I mean, they're going to get 6,000-7,000 votes out of Sioux County or, you know, 10,000-12,000 votes out of those northwest counties. But that's not going to matter much. They need to start pulling those no-party voters that are located in the eastern, more populated part of the state.
Larimer looked at records since the year 2000 and found that most 10 more Republican counties in Iowa are primarily in the western half of the state in very rural areas.
They obviously go strongly toward the Republican ticket, but they make up a very small percentage of the total number of votes going to presidential candidates. The difference with the Democrats, yes, these are strong Democratic counties, but they don't differ as much from the other 89 counties as the top 10 Republican counties did. But their vote share is much higher. You're talking about usually 31% of the vote share for the Democratic candidate coming from these top 10 Democratic counties.
Larimer also identified the counties which had the highest percentage of independent or no-party voters, and those were in eastern Iowa.
8 out of the top 10 no-party counties had a majority vote share, that is more than 50%, going for President Obama. That's very similar to the top 10 Democratic counties. So again, these no-party counties tend to be located where you have strong Democratic counties, and they tend to vote like the top 10 Democratic counties.
The counties with the highest percentage of independent voters were Floyd, Bremer, Buchanan, Delaware, Benton, Iowa, Cedar, and Clinton. Obama won a higher percentage of the vote in each of those counties in 2012 than he did in 2008. Well, council members have not found a way to make Martin Luther King Day a paid holiday for municipal workers in Sioux City. The city council discussed the issue on Monday, trying to figure out how to deal with different union contracts and pay extra money to maintain key city services on those holidays. The Sioux City chapter of the NAACP for 27 years has asked city leaders to recognize the slain civil rights leader's birthday as a holiday. The county, state, and federal governments already have done so. Dick Hayes of the NAACP told the council that it's time to do the right thing. The city recognizes several holidays under which city workers get paid days off, depending on union contracts. Governor Terry Branstad and former Governor Robert Ray are set to appear together to reveal the plans for Ray's papers. Branstad and Ray have a news conference scheduled for this afternoon at the State Historical Museum. They'll announce the plans for Ray's official papers. Ray, a Republican, was governor from 1969 through 1983, and during his time in office, he served as chairman of the National Governors Association for 2 years, and in 1979, he was a part of the U.S. delegation to the special U.N. Conference on Refugees in Geneva, Switzerland. Branstad served as lieutenant governor during Ray's final term in office and succeeded him in office. Taking a look at world headlines at this hour, Russia's state news agency says American Edward Snowden has formally asked for temporary asylum in Russia. Snowden's Russia lawyer says his client submitted the asylum request today to Russia's Federal Migration Service. Snowden, who has admitted leaking U.S. secret surveillance programs, has said he wants to stay in Russia while he works out flying to one of the Latin American nations that have offered him asylum. Police in Los Angeles say up to 150 people broke windows and attacked people on sidewalks as hundreds of others peacefully protested the acquittal of George Zimmerman and the Trayvon Martin killing. Police arrested 13 people last night in L.A.'s Crenshaw District. Meanwhile, one of the six jurors in the trial is speaking out while still remaining anonymous. She told CNN that she had plans to write a book, but has since changed her mind. Convicted killer Jodi Arias heads to court in Phoenix today to ask a judge to toss out a jury's finding that makes her eligible for the death penalty. The jury found Arias guilty of shooting and stabbing her ex-boyfriend, Travis Alexander, but couldn't decide whether to give Arias the death penalty or life in prison. Prosecutors have been weighing whether to go through another penalty phase with a new jury. News time is 8:11.
Part of making a major purchase is knowing what kind of service it'll require. For reliable home comfort systems, just look to us. Jacobson Plumbing and Heating in Fontenelle, your local Trane dealer. Bob Jacobson here. From major repairs, including new house construction, to seasonal maintenance, we can make your home more comfortable. When it comes to heating, cooling, venting, or plumbing your new home or existing residence, Jacobson Plumbing and Heating can get the job done right and in a professional, timely manner. How can I be sure? Because when you call Jacobson Plumbing and Heating, you'll talk with me, the owner, and I'm also the one who will be doing the work. It's my name and my reputation at stake, two things I don't take lightly. I'll do the work, and I'll do it right. Satisfaction guaranteed. Call Jacobson Plumbing and Heating in Fontenelle. Don't put it off. Call me right now. 877-838-8580. Jacobson Plumbing and Heating in Fontenelle, where it's hard to stop a train.
In the funeral announcements, David D. Williams, age 52 of Atlantic, died Thursday at the Cass County Hospital. Memorial services for David Williams will be this morning at 10:30 at the First United Methodist Church in Atlantic. Roland Funeral Service in Atlantic has the arrangements. Odell Moore, age 87, formerly of Menlo, died Saturday at the New Homestead in Guthrie Center. Memorial services for Odell Moore will be today at 10:30 at the Glendon Church in Glendon. Twig Funeral Home in Guthrie Center has arrangements. Grace Ann Knutson, age 83 of Harlan, died Thursday at the Avoca Nursing and Rehab Center. Funeral services for Grace Ann Knutson will be today at 11 o'clock at the First United Methodist Church in Harlan. Paulie Jones Funeral Home in Harlan has arrangements. Vernon Schnack, age 73 of Walnut and formerly of Harlan, died Sunday at his home. Funeral services for Vernon Schnack will be held tomorrow at 10 o'clock at the Burmeister Johansson Funeral Home in Harlan. James Jim Levi Jacobson, age 72 of Harlan, died Saturday at the Elmcrest Retirement Community. Funeral services for Jim Jacobson will be tomorrow at 10:30 at the Paulie Jones Funeral Home in Harlan. And Laura Pardee, age 102 of Audubon, died Sunday at the Audubon County Hospital. A massive Christian burial service for Laura Pardee will be on Thursday at 10:30 at the St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Audubon. Kessler Funeral Home in Audubon has the arrangements. And the news was brought to you by Jacobson Plumbing and Heating in Fontenelle, where it's hard to stop a train. I'm Rick Hansen reporting.